Hey, from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, a show where two clowns from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Aaron Patterson.
Yeah, and I'm your co-host, John Trouble. You put a little English on the live there.
Yeah, no, put a little heat, put a little spit on it, a little sriracha sauce right there at the end. You like that?
Yeah, that was stylish. That was interesting.
I'm styling and profiling today, baby.
127 episodes in, we're still finding variations on the opening.
That's right. We're still trying to make it new, make it fresh, just like a marriage. You know, we're trying to spice things up.
And speaking of marriages,
oh,
this week we're covering the movie On the Rocks from 2020, starring Bill Murray and Rashida Jones. Also has another SNL alum, Jenny Slate, in it. And it's all about Rashida Jones's marriage to Marlon Wayans.
Yeah, this movie came out last year in October. Hit up straight to Apple TV, a streaming service that I don't think too many people have. I know you got it for just for this film. Like
I signed up for it last night. I signed up for the free week, and I was like looking at it, and I'm like, okay, well, let's see what Apple TV's got going on. I have no idea what they're offering. And then I looked at it, and I was like, really? Whoa, this is it? This is all you got?
Yeah, that's the thing about Apple TV. They're still building their cachet, as they were. They got a few things going for them. They have Ted Lasso being the main thing, the show I love.
Right. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, shout out to Jason Sudeikis, who just recently won the Golden Globe for it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have like the morning show with that show with Reese Witherspoon and
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston. Yeah, I haven't seen that, but I hear good things. There's that.
Haven't seen it. Not too curious about that one.
Yeah. There's that show, the Shyamalan show, Servant, which again haven't seen.
And you lost me at Shyamalan show.
He's trying to come back. People say he's like kind of getting there. Like I think with the last movie, the Split movie and Glass, people liked more than the other stuff. But I don't know. He kind of really dug himself a hole to crawl out of after the last Airbender. Like after that movie, people were like, I am done with this dude.
Well, it's just like, you know, if you do everything with a twist ending, twist endings aren't really surprising anymore when you do them on every single project, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. Like after, after The Sixth Sense, like that whole movie, like the twist is like the big thing that people talked about.
Yeah,
and then he did Unbreakable, which was good, and Signs, and then after that, he just became like the twist guy. People just expected to see a twist from him. I still remember. Yeah. I forget what magazine it was. It might have been like Newsweek or Time, but it was like around the second or third movie, he was on the cover with the title saying "The Next Steven Spielberg."
Yeah,
like, dude was three movies in, and people were like comparing him to Spielberg.
That right there, that's setting the guy up for a fall.
Yeah, exactly. And then he came out like with The Village and The Lady in the Water, and it was just like,
yeah,
people were like, oh, that's not that great. Oh, that's not great either. And then the last Airbender was the nail.
Yeah, I've never seen that. That's supposedly just absolutely horrible.
Yeah, like I can't find anybody to say a good thing about that movie. It was just like P-U,
as yeah.
Kids say. And I remember like a friend of mine saw the that other film he did, The Happening, with Mike Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel.
Oh, that's the one where the plants are going nuts.
Spoiler. But yeah,
it is. Oh, is that the big twist in that one?
Yeah, it was like towards the end where like it was like everybody was running away from some unseen force that was causing people to kill themselves, and then
how did all these plants get like this?
Hey guys, I think it's the trees. Like,
oh
like
my Marlon, God.
Like I think Mark
is after us, you guys.
Yeah, like Mark Wahlberg was like he plays like a science teacher, like a high school science teacher, and he's like a botanist, and he like figured out, oh my God, I think it's the plants. They're killing everybody, guys. And like my friend, like I think I don't know if it was at that point or midway through, but my friend walked out of the theater. He was like, "This movie's ridiculous. I can't with this."
I remember a number of years ago, I was at the theater, and a trailer came up for whatever his latest project was, and it was like I think a bunch of people in stuck in an elevator, and one of them was a demon or something. I don't remember the name of this.
Oh, but, Devil, I think it was called.
Okay, okay. But when it came up, like, from M. Night Shyamalan, the theater, or at least a section of the theater, laughed. So
yeah, you don't want that.
He was not in a good spot in his career.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're a comedic director, you don't want people to laugh at your name.
At the mention of your name. No, that's not good.
Oh, poor Shyamalan. But I think he's kind of slowly coming back, but I don't know. He has a ways to go. Where were we talking about? Oh, Apple TV. Yeah, so he has a show on there now that I haven't seen. But I would say, I mean, if you're going to subscribe for the week for Apple TV, I would say watch Ted Lasso. Watch the Beastie Boys story.
Yeah, those are the only things I've done. Because, like, usually when you sign up for a new streaming service, you're like, okay, well, let me build up a watch list. Let me see what you got. And I was like, wow, you've got hardly anything. Because, like, you want, like, some original content, but you also want some old favorites or things, you know? Some classic films, some TV shows that you love. You want an Office. You want a 30 Rock. And yeah. Apple TV doesn't really have any of that.
I think the thing with Apple TV that kind of came late to the game. So yeah. It's that thing where, like, all those shows that you mentioned, like The Office and 30 Rock, they're all on other streaming platforms. They're all on
exactly.
Hulu, and now Paramount Plus is, like, making the big leap. And, you know, of course, Netflix. Like, so, like, all those other shows that you mentioned, they're all on their, you know, the Viacom streaming platform or whoever.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if in, like, a year or two, Apple just announces they're merging with some other streaming service.
I kind of hope they do, because I really like Ted Lasso, and that deserves to be seen by more people. So if, like,
that's getting a second season, right?
Yeah, it is. Like, I think when Sudeikis accepted his Golden Globe, he was in London filming it, so that's why.
I heard.
That's why he seemed kind of sleepy and out of it, and wearing like a tie-dye hoodie.
Yeah, people were giving him grief for that, but honestly, like, I watched the Golden Globes last week, and since most people were, like, zooming in from home, for me, it made much more sense the people who were casually dressed than the people who were, like, dressed to the nines, and they're just, like, sitting in their bedroom or a hotel room. That was weird.
It would be weird to, like, get all dressed up from the waist up just to maybe accept an award.
I saw Jodie Foster won an award, or she was recognized for something, and I'm forgetting what at this point, but like, she was just, like, kind of in casual pajamas and just, like, sitting on the couch with her wife, and she had her dog there, and I was like, Jodie Foster's got the right idea, man.
Yeah, like, at that point, you treat it like a really nice slumber party. Like, where, like, buy, like, you go out and buy the nicest pajamas you can. Maybe, uh-huh. Maybe do up your hair, maybe a little makeup, and that's it.
I was just like, Jodie Foster, you are putting this in the proper perspective. I mean, I just thought she had the right idea. And I loved, like, during her acceptance speech, at one point you hear, like, some noise in the background. She's like, oh, yeah, my guests downstairs, they just heard that I won. So there was, like, a cheer going up. I was like, oh, Jodie Foster, you rock.
Okay. All right, so just to mention, yeah, so she won a Best Actress Supporting Role for her role in the legal drama The Mauritanian, which I believe is on Apple Plus.
Oh, okay. Well, hey.
So, there you go. So now you got another thing to watch on Apple Plus, The Mauritanian.
Honestly, it's going to be Ted Lasso and the Beastie Boys doc, and I think that's going to carry me through the week, and then I'm fine just finishing up. I'm not re-upping for another month. There's just not enough for me there.
All right. No, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're going to see the Beastie Boys, and you're going to see Ted Lasso, but you have seen On the Rocks, the movie we're talking about today.
I have. I just finished watching that maybe like a half hour ago.
Hey, now. So, yeah, let's get into this. Like, I mean, this movie was pretty interesting just because it's a fairly short movie. It's only an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Directed and I believe written by Sofia Coppola. This is
the
third time Sofia Coppola has worked with Bill Murray, because, of course, there was Lost in Translation, and she directed the Netflix special A Very Murray Christmas.
Which is fun. I watched that Christmas or two back, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about doing an episode about that. We gotta we got to just do it this holiday season.
Well, yeah, when Christmas rolls around, yeah, let's absolutely do that. I'm sure that's not going anywhere on Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a lot of fun. And it's also, besides the third time that Bill Murray has worked with Sofia Coppola, he's also worked with Rashida Jones a few times. He had a cameo on Parks and Rec in the last season.
That's right.
Do we want to say what the cameo is, or would that spoil it?
I mean, it's been a number of years. I think we can spoil it at this point. It's been a while.
He was the mayor of Pawnee, and apparently they wanted to get him to play the mayor of Pawnee for years and years and years. So they never featured the mayor on the show until they could get Bill Murray. And then they finally get him in the last season. I think it was only a few episodes from the end. And he just played a corpse in a casket because the mayor had passed away.
Yeah, that was so weird. Because like you said, like they do a thing where he videotaped himself as the mayor talking to his, you know, the town members. And then the next thing, he's passed away. So it's literally the only scene that the people in Parks and Rec have with Bill Murray is of him dead in a casket.
And like, that's genius, I think. I mean, and I'm sure that's how they hooked him. They were like, Bill, you're going to play a corpse.
He's like, I'm listening.
Yeah. I mean, how many chances do you have to do that? And he also appeared on at least one episode of Rashida Jones's show, Angie Tribeca, which I really liked.
Yeah, guys, that's another show I think never got it. I don't even know if they're still doing it, but
They aren't. They aren't. They did like, I think, 2-3 seasons of it, and I believe they're done with it.
Okay. But like, I remember seeing that and I was like, oh, this, like, it's basically a modern day Police Squad.
Or yes.
Like, so if you're into things like the movie Airplane, Naked Gun, go find Andrew Tribeca. Yeah. I believe it's
like those Zucker Abrams Zucker films of yore. And
right.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's got a lot of good people in it. There's Rashida Jones, Jerry Burns. I'm forgetting the name of the actor who played her partner.
I know Dion Cole's in it.
Dion Cole, yeah. I mean, Dion Cole's just hilarious. Always. Right. Alfred Molina's in it.
Yeah, I remember seeing, I think like James Franco was in an episode real quick.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of great celebrities come through on there, I think, just because Rashida Jones is friends with a lot of people. And I'm sure that's how they got Bill Murray on, because she was friendly with Bill Murray. And she was also in the Bill Murray Christmas special that Sofia Coppola directed. And she, I found out looking up the trivia on this movie, she has a connection with Sofia Coppola. When Sofia Coppola was workshopping the script for Lost in Translation with an acting class, Rashida Jones was one of the students, and she played the part of Charlotte that Scarlett Johansson ended up playing in the final film.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
So that's really cool.
Look at that.
And, I mean, and who doesn't like Rashida Jones? I mean, she's pretty awesome.
Rashida Jones rocks.
Yeah.
Don Cheadle rocks, and Rashida Jones rocks.
Yes, yes. I mean, I'll see pretty much anything with Rashida Jones. She's a lot of fun.
She's a hoot and a half.
Did you know she used to date Colin Jost?
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Now Colin Jost is married to Scarlett Johansson? What is going on here?
Well, I mean, I don't think it was real recently. Let me see. Let me look up the personal life.
I mean, Colin's dating record is amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Okay, it doesn't mention anything on her Wikipedia page about it, but they did date. They both went to Harvard. They didn't go to Harvard at the same time, but they and I don't know exactly when. I wonder if it's on Jost's Wikipedia page. Let's look this up. I'm going to go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, let's do some sleuthing.
We got to figure this out.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the movie, but we got to get to the bottom of this first.
No, okay. It doesn't mention it on his Wikipedia page either, but I know this was a thing.
I mean, is Jost just like smooth like that he can just get all these, you know, hilariously funny and attractive women? Huh.
Okay, wait. the first link when I search on their names together... have you been Josted when celebrities are ashamed of, and then the headline is cut off. That's not a good first hit.
Yeah. That tracks.
But I've definitely got some paparazzi pictures of them arm in arm. I think they did it for a few years.
I mean, bravo, sir, bravo.
Yeah.
Well done. I can't say nothing about that. I'm mad at
it. Right?
Yeah, I was like, all right.
Well, she also dated one of the guys from, oh God, what's that hipster band that I'm blanking on the name of now?
Oh, Vampire Weekend?
Vampire Weekend, yeah.
I thought she's married to that dude.
I think she was, yeah.
No, I think she is. Ezra Koenig, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I believe they definitely have a kid together. I believe they're married as well.
Let me go back to...
Well, we're just getting into Rashida's dating history now.
Yeah. She was engaged to music producer Mark Ronson in February 2003.
Mark Ronson, the dude from Don't Believe It, Just Watch.
Do you know what I mean? Wow. He proposed on her 27th birthday using a custom-made crossword puzzle spelling out, "Will you marry me?" Their relationship ended approximately 1 year later. In 2018, Jones had a son with her boyfriend, musician Ezra Koenig. So I don't think they're married.
I thought they were. All right.
Well, they're together.
Okay, yeah. They're together. Yeah, not in holy matrimony, but they're together.
It just lists her. It lists partners. Yes. It doesn't list spouses.
They're happily living in sin. That's great.
Marriage, it's not for everyone.
That's true. And speaking of which, On the Rocks. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
It's about the marriage. It actually, the movie opens up with the marriage of Rashida Jones's character to Marlon Wayans' character.
Yes. In this movie, Rashida Jones is a character named Laura. Marlon Wayans is a character named Dean. It opens up on their wedding, them, you know, getting married. And I think at some point, because they got married in this huge, beautiful hall with, I guess, there's like a pool in it upstairs. And then they go like skinny dipping on their wedding day. And then
we see them kind of sneaking off. And then the movie like flashes forward to a few years into the marriage and they've got a couple kids.
Right. So like basically they, like you said, they have two kids, married couple. She's doing the mom stuff, picking up, toys and food off the floor. They also mentioned that she's a writer. She's like a novelist who I believe she sold an idea for a book, but she didn't finish or start the book yet.
Yeah, yeah. She's on the phone with one of her friends. She's kind of bemoaning. She's like, why did I sell a book before I finished writing it? And she's suffering from writer's block for most of the movie. And I really like the portrayal of writer's block. They got that pretty darn well.
Yeah,
Pretty darn good.
Because like at one point, it's just like literally her just kind of, in front of a computer with no distractions and just her just not knowing.
And she starts rearranging the things on her desk. And later in the movie, when things are going better and she has stuff to write, we see her, she's like edited on a printout and then she's going in and making changes on the computer from her printout. And I've done that. I've done that so many times with articles because you spot so many more things when you actually physically print it out. And
I never thought of that.
Yeah. Okay. So I wonder if Sofia Coppola does that as well as a writer.
I would assume so. I feel like there's like a few things in here that like was taken from real life. So that's what Laura does. Dean is a guy who's like, who has his own startup, who's starting up this new sort of tech firm, tech company. So
They're kind of vague on what he does, but at one point he's talking about, oh yeah, we got this many hits and we got ROIs and all that. He's using a lot of the jargon.
Yeah,
so it's some sort of social media type thing, right?
A lot of abbreviations he's using.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. He says like, ROI, and then he immediately says like return on investment. And I'm like, if you're using the term ROI, you know what it stands for and your spouse knows what it stands for. Yeah. That was just something they threw in for the audience, I thought. Yeah.
It's like you dummies in the audience. You need to know the definition of this.
Yeah.
He has this tech startup and he's away a lot. He's away on business trips. He's constantly traveling to different cities and countries. And so he's just away from the family a lot. So at one point we see Rashida Jones put the kids to bed. She's watching a Chris Rock stand-up special, Never Scared. And of course, it's the part where Chris Rock talks about how you don't have sex in marriages once you get, you know, once you get married. It cuts to her falling asleep.
I don't have sex. I have intercourse.
I've had fellatio. It's a good bit, guys. Listen to it.
Yeah, it's a great bit.
So then it cuts forward to Rashida Jones asleep in bed. Her husband Dean comes home, you know, exhausted, straight from the airport. He, you know, drops his bags. He gets into bed with his wife and starts kissing her and making out with her. And she's, you know, surprised, like, oh, hey, hello. And yeah, he has this look on his face, like, as soon as she says hello, where he stops kissing her and looks back and he's like, oh, hello.
Yeah, he's kind of startled by it. And then, yeah, and then it just stops and then he just falls asleep next to her. And yeah, and we see her on the phone with a friend a little later, and she's like, yeah, he took a Xanax on the flight, and he came in, and he started kissing me, and, you know, that's weird, right? And that's kind of the start of her suspicion. She thinks that her husband might be having an affair, because it seemed like he was surprised by who he was kissing. He thought he was kissing somebody else.
Mm. Yes, suspicions arise.
Yeah.
So then we kind of go through Laura's day, where she takes care of her kids, the husband out, you know, with the tech startup, you know, at his business. We see her drop off her kids at a school. And then we see, I think, like you mentioned, Jenny Slate, who plays Vanessa, who is like this friend of hers, I guess, kind of, because like in each scene that the two of them are together, it's literally just Jenny Slate's character, Vanessa, kind of unloading on her all her, you know, what she's going through with guys. And
yeah.
Just and then Rashida Jones, Laura, just kind of nodding. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jenny
yeah.
Slate's character is very much into her own shit, and she just really wants to talk about all her own shit. And you never hear Jenny Slate go like, "Well, how are you doing, Rashida Jones?"
Yeah. She's like basically one of those people that talk at you and not to you.
Yeah. She's just very wrapped up in her own drama. She's like, yeah, "Oh well, you know, there's this guy and blah blah blah, blah. And I'm going to introduce him to my son." And then, like, later in the movie, we find out that the guy that she was into was married.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically the whole thing is played for laughs, and it's kind of like a runner throughout. But it's pretty funny. You know, it's good to see Ann Perkins and Mona Lisa Saperstein on screen together.
You know, I didn't even realize the Parks and Rec connection between them until I was like looking at the trivia, and I was like, oh yeah, they were both in Parks and Rec.
Another Parks and Rec connection. Parks and Rec, mm-hmm. Everything connects, baby.
Yeah, it all comes down to Parks and Rec.
It does. So yeah, so then we go on throughout her day. We see that I think Laura is kind of unpacking Dean's suitcase to, like, I guess get something to help her daughter with, and then she mm-hmm. notices that there's a bag of women's toiletries in his suitcase.
Yeah, there's this little like kind of a small travel bag, and and it's not one of hers. She doesn't recognize it. She opens it up. It's very feminine. It's got like hearts all over it. And she opens it up, and there's like this big bottle of body oil in it.
So yeah. She's
like, what the hell's going on?
Because, you know, guys,
is this my husband's bag?
You know, bros need body oil, man. What's the problem?
And
oil up.
We see her also talking on the phone with her father, and we hear Bill Murray's voice in here. Bill Murray doesn't make his entrance in this movie until like about 18 minutes in.
Yeah, and it's a pretty, like, a grand entrance. It's like a da-da-da-da, Bill mm-hmm. Murray. But it's good. It's good. But yeah, so she talks to her dad, Bill Murray, who plays a Felix, and she says, yeah, that's weird, right? The fact that he has body oil in his bag. And she actually asks Dean about it, and Dean says, oh, yeah, that belongs to Fiona, you know, the person I work with. Like, she couldn't get the bag through security. She didn't, she couldn't put it in her bag, so she just put it in my bag. I'll just bring it to her at work. And that's a fair enough, statement to make, but it's definitely little suspicious.
It's plausible, but it's still like a little suspicious, because
yes,
you're just like,
so.
I enjoyed how ambiguous the movie played all these hints, because you really can see it both ways.
Right. It is
like at one point, Rashida Jones's character, she goes to an office party for her husband Dean, and he's very much focused on all the work stuff. He like introduces her quickly to Fiona, who's like his work buddy, and then she's very kind of quickly shunted off to like another group.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I watched this with my wife, and she said she noticed, she got like, wasn't crazy about that, because she did notice how, like, you could definitely tell Rashida Jones didn't, or Laura, didn't know anybody at this party. Mm-hmm. You know, the only person she knew was Dean, and Dean was, like, kind of too busy to, like, kind of be with her. He was, like, too busy talking to other people, and she was just kind of left alone to her own devices at this party. Yeah. She didn't really know anybody. People were kind of trying to make small talk with her, but it was, like, so awkward.
But there's so little common ground. It's like, you know, oh, so how long have you worked here? Oh, well, just a few months. Do you like it? Yeah, it's all right. And that's pretty much it. That's all they got. They've exhausted their conversation after 10 seconds.
As somebody who's been to many a party, I totally like connect to that vibe where you're just there. Yeah. And you don't know anybody there. And you're just like, all right, well, good talking to you. I'm gonna go get another drink.
It's an awkward thing. And, you know, office parties, they're kind of awkward even without like spouses and significant others in the mix, because you're socializing with all these people that you work with and you don't necessarily have anything in common outside of the job you both do.
Yeah, that's true. I just started a new job this week, and like, so we didn't get, I didn't get to do the office party because, not this week, I started a new job last year. What am I saying? Good God.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't able to do the office party thing. And like part of me was kind of relieved just because, yeah, outside of the work we do, what do we have in common really? But yep. You know, sometimes you can maybe find out, oh, we like the same band or we watch the same TV show. And like, that does happen. You can't connect.
Oh yeah. I mean, sometimes you bond with people you work with and sometimes you're lucky enough to get a job with a friend or something and you're still friends, but it's still weird.
Yeah, that's where a good old friend alcohol comes into play, my friend. Thank you, alcohol.
For the office parties, not for the, like the day to day.
Sure.
Okay.
Anyway, all right. But yeah,
join us next week for Darren's intervention.
What? I'm busy that day.
Okay.
Got a party to go to.
But so it's like all these little things that are kind of adding up and they're making Laura suspicious. And so Bill Murray, her dad, just says, well, hey, let's get together. Let's talk about it. And they talk about it. And we find out over the course of a few scenes that Bill Murray, he has had his own history with infidelity. So he kind of knows what to look for.
Right. I mean, Bill Murray's character is, you know, named Felix. And he's basically... He's a bit of a Lothario, as you can say. He's a bit of a playboy, a ladies' man. He's basically that type of guy that, in this film, he's an art dealer, and he's just this type of guy that like people automatically like and want to be around. Like he's like the dude. He's a guy that like
very much like Bill Murray in real life.
Yes, I mean, very much so.
Everyone's happy to see him. Everyone, he has like a rapport with everyone. Right, I mean, like, there's one point about midway through the movie where they get pulled over by some cops.
Oh my God, that scene!
and Bill Murray, he just says, "Oh hey, we're because he's driving recklessly through the city." There, this movie takes place and is shot in New York City for the most part. And oh, it's so nice to see like the real New York City and not just like some generic Toronto, Vancouver thing pretending to be New York.
Yeah, no, that was all New York. Like,
I just was watching this and I'm just like, oh God, I miss New York. I miss like visiting New York.
Aww.
But like he's driving recklessly through the city because they're tailing the husband. They decided to tail Dean, and he's in the most ostentatious car imaginable. They're in like this hot red convertible.
Right, it's like a little, like a vintage sports car.
Yeah, yeah, and he like brings caviar on their little stakeout thing, they're tailing Dean as he's like entertaining some coworkers at a club.
Right, and then I think at one point at the club, it's basically like Dean and Fiona, the woman that he works very closely with, and some clients. So then, like when they're done, the clients leave in one cab. And then Fiona and Dean gets into another cab. And then I'm like, oh, that's suspicious. And then they follow him and they literally like zip through the streets, like down the West Side Highway. They cut people off.
Right.
It's really ridiculous.
And Bill Murray's like, oh, well, you know, we got to stick with him. They're trying to lose us. And of course they get pulled over by the cops and Bill Murray just says like, oh, hey, we're going to meet some new people. We're going to make some friends. That's right. His reaction to getting pulled over. And sure enough, when he gets pulled over and he has to get out of his car and he's talking to the cop, he recognizes the cop's name tag and he's like, oh, are you Tommy O'Callaghan's son?
Yeah.
And it turns out Bill Murray goes back with the guy's dad.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, yeah, I was at his beef eater, like at his or his steak dinner at his retirement party. Yeah, I saw him. I saw Timmy. And the cop's like, Timmy, no, that's my grandpa. And like, as he's talking and charming his way out of a ticket, they like become buddies. And he's like, oh, well, now my car will start. Do you mind giving me a push? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem.
And the two cops, like, they push the convertible so that it'll restart. Because like, you're hearing it backfiring as he's, like, pushing it on this sort of car chase sequence. But Bill Murray's kind of, like, stoking Rashida Jones's suspicions throughout the movie. He's like, well, have you checked your husband's phone? Have you checked his cell phone? And, you know, check for any text messages. And she at one point like gets her husband's cell phone. He's changed the lock code on it. And then she looks up the name Fiona and nothing comes up. And when she tells Bill Murray about that, he's like, well, that means he's been deleting text messages. Cause I mean, if you're working with somebody, you're probably texting him a lot.
I mean, that is true. Yeah. But I think at the same Dean said, oh yeah, we had some like security protocols for all our phones. So like, I had to get a new password and like that probably affect like it's very like it, like his responses are very plausible, but like there's still that kind of nagging doubt that's like
Yeah, he still acts like squirrely enough that you're still a little suspicious.
Yeah, but I mean he's a good dad. He's a good person. He loves his kids and he loves his, you know he's just into his work all the time. So but there is enough
he
there.
He dotes on his daughters. I mean you can tell you don't see him. Too much of him as a dad because he's so busy with work, but he's obviously a good dad.
Exactly. Back to Felix. I mean, I don't know, Bill Murray in this role, like he kind of makes this movie just because he's just, like you say, he's like, he plays that character, that guy that's like you said, like very, very much like Bill Murray. He's like very, you instantly like him. He always flirts with women, with any woman that comes by him. People just gravitates towards him. He's like a very learned person. He knows different languages. Like at one point, I think the waitress that serves him when he's with Laura, he finds that she's Russian, so he speaks a little Russian to her.
And he recognizes from her stance, he's like, "Oh, you're a ballet dancer," and she's like, "Oh, yes, I trained at such and so," and he starts talking with her and sort of mildly flirting with her. And this is, of course, this woman who's like decades younger than him because it's like this young waitress in her 20s. But because it's Bill Murray, it's charming rather than creepy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just the guy that like people are just like, oh, that guy's really cool. He's just that. So, Laura basically tells her concerns about like, I think something's going on. And of course, like you said, Bill, Felix kind of stokes the fire, saying, "Well, we need to, you know, I know a guy." I think the first thing he said is, like she says that, oh, he was staying in London, and then she said, "Well, where was he staying?"
And he asked about the hotels he was staying at, and he's like, "Oh, well, that's the Blake. That's not a hotel you stay with when you're traveling alone. That's like sort of this tucked away, small romantic place." And he's like, "I know a concierge at this other hotel, and he knows all the other concierges in town, so I'll check up on him."
Yeah, that's another thing that goes on. Like, he's like one of those guys that knows a guy that can get you information or whatever you want. Like, oh, yeah, I know a guy. He's like, I mean, I don't know too many people like that in my life, but, like, God, that must be a really nice way to live.
He's got a guy. I mean, it's, you know, he's got the money, he's got the influence. That's what you do.
Right,
you know people. You got people. You got people to wait on you hand and foot, and you know he's got a chauffeur who drives him around the city.
It's pretty nice. I mean, at one point, I think what was it? I think Laura says to him, like after they get out of the ticket with the cop, she said, I think she says, looks at him and says, "It must be very nice to be you."
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it's pretty
yeah. And he's like, I wouldn't trade it for anything. He is very happy with his life. He's got a good life.
Right. So Felix kind of agrees that all the stuff is very suspicious that Dean's doing. Of course, you know, he also has a kind of a Neanderthalic way of looking at men. It's like, yeah, this is what men do. We conquer.
He talks about how men are sort of evolutionarily wired up to not be monogamous. And he's got all these historic or evolutionary justifications for it.
Right. Like, I think he said at one point, yeah, back when we were Neanderthals, like, we'd walk on all fours, and mm-hmm. the female's haunches is what would attract
right.
men to women. So as we evolved and we began to walk, breast size kind of became the new haunches.
Right. And men were attracted to adolescent women because they were younger and they were easier to catch, I think he says.
Yeah. And I was like, why are you saying this to your daughter? Good God.
Yeah. he's got no filter, really. I mean, he says what is on his mind.
Holy moly.
Whether it is appropriate or not. I mean, at one point, he picks up his granddaughters, Laura's two daughters from ballet class. He's flirting with the ballet teacher a little bit. He's like, oh, you're standing in fourth position. And she's like, oh, yes, I guess I am. And then later, after they get back to Laura's apartment, and she's like, okay, I'm going to go grab a quick shower. Can you just watch the kids for a while? And she comes out. He's been showing the girls Breaking Bad. And these are like, the youngest one's like a toddler.
Yeah, these are children. They should not
be. He is like still in a stroller. And the other one's like 7 at best, I think.
I'm a grown-ass man, and Breaking Bad was too much for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't know what episode of Breaking Bad he's showing him. But... Oof. And he's also made him egg creams right before dinner.
Yeah, I guess you shouldn't do that.
So he's a good granddad, and that his granddaughters love him, but you know, he's spoiling them rotten, as grandparents are wont to do.
Absolutely. So then later on we learn that Dean is actually going to be out of town for Laura's birthday. He's going to be in LA. Felix isn't crazy about that. He's like, you should be in town for your birthday. That's
yeah. He's like, I always travel a lot, but I always made it a point to be home for the birthdays.
Yeah, so, I mean, he kind of paints himself as, like, maybe a better person than he remembers he was.
We find out over the course of the movie that, I mean, his marriage to Laura's mother ended basically because of his affairs. Yeah. Affairs, plural.
Yeah. Oof. But, yeah, so basically at this point, Dean leaves for L.A. to go on another business trip. Felix sends Laura some roses. Then Dean calls
for her birthday.
And then Dean calls Laura and the family, you know, FaceTimes her and says, oh, I got you a gift. And I think the kids get the gift. It was a gift that the kids helped Dean wrap. She unwraps it, and it's a
big box.
It's a big old box.
Big box. It's exciting. You're like, oh, what could this be? And she opens it up, and it's like this big multi-appliance tool.
Yeah, it's something called a Thermomix, which is an actual thing. It's like a cooking appliance that helps you, like, kind of, you know, slice and dice and julienne and steam vegetables and what have you.
Yeah. And not the kind of gift you want for your birthday, and certainly not the type of gift you want from your husband on your birthday.
Yeah, guys, just a pro tip. Don't give your, you know, significant other anything that's like, oh, this will help you cook me better dinners. This will help you clean our filthy home. Don't get them anything like that.
Don't buy the Cuisinarts. Don't buy the vacuum cleaners. You know, it's their birthday. You want to do the jewelry.
Yeah, go do something nice. Do something fancy pants.
Jewelry, a nice dress, a fun trip. Take them out to dinner.
Yeah, you know, put on the Ritz, as the kids say. Yeah. So then Felix calls Laura, says, hey, I'm downstairs right now. I'm taking you out for your birthday. You know, get a sitter at the last minute. I'm taking you out. So, of course, she finds a sitter at the very last minute. I think somebody lives in the building.
Yeah, I think she has a neighbor.
Right. And, and Felix takes her out. He mentions that he had Dean followed, and he's saying, well, he went to this store the Cartier store on 52nd and 5th, which is a very expensive jewelry store. And he asked, well, did he get you like something in a small box for your birthday? And he was like, no, he gave me like a Thermomix. And he's like, well, because he was at a jewelry store.
Yeah.
And if he didn't get you anything.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. So, I mean, again, all these little things that are just kind of adding up and they don't look good.
Right. And also at the time, Felix does give his daughter a gift, an old watch that belonged to him. So she says, mm-hmm. very nice. And she puts on the watch that belongs to her daddy.
Yeah, it was like a watch that she always liked. And yeah, it's a very meaningful gift.
Right. So then after that happens, Dean comes back home. He wants to take Laura out for a birthday that he missed. And so they have a nice little, you know, to go out for drinks and food. And but he seems kind of preoccupied with like looking at his phone and stuff.
He's checking his text messages during dinner. At one point, you see the waiter brings over like a little like a small cake with candles in it, but it's going to the neighboring table.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
And then Dean's like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you want a cake? And she's like, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it's like this awkward moment.
Yeah. Cause he's like, I know you don't like, you know, cheesy stuff like that. So I didn't get you a cake, but if you want a cake, I get you a cake. And she's like, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I think at one point when they're talking, making small talk, he says, oh, so, how's the thing going? How's the thing? And she's like, oh, you mean my writing?
Yeah.
It's a little too real, that scene. But I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell he's not entirely engaged. His you know, he's trying to do the right thing for his wife, but he's not fully there.
Exactly. So then I think the next day, that's when, I think we already talked about it, when he has the meeting with the clients, and he brings Fiona, the, you know, this very lovely looking assistant. And of course, at this point, Felix and Laura, Felix wants to follow him and brings Laura in the red convertible drop top. And and then that's when all that stuff happens that we talked about where
with the cops. Yeah.
With the cop, which was a great scene where he just is able to talk his way out of a ticket. You know, as a comedian, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
As a,
yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
As a black man, I was like, oh, that must be nice. Must be nice, boss. Must be nice.
Oh, okay. So at this point, it feels like a science fiction film to you.
Yes, very much so. I was like, oh, the cops can just, you know, let you go without any incident.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
the situation de-escalated very, very quickly.
Quote Rod Stewart, some guys have all the luck.
Yeah. Bill Burr is leading a charmed life in this movie.
Absolutely. And so I think then at that point, the next day happened, and I think Felix calls Laura over to the apartment, saying he put a hot watch ad on him on
right, Dean. which is like tracking his credit cards and his phone calls too, or something.
Yeah, at this point I'm like, you're an art dealer. You have access to all this shit?
He's got a guy. He's got a guy for everything.
It's amazing.
But, I mean, so he finds out, because he's tracking Dean's credit cards, he finds out that Dean has booked a trip to Mexico.
Yeah, and Laura's like, no, that's not right. He would have told me if he was going to Mexico.
No. He's going to Mexico.
Yeah.
And she has no idea about it. And right. Then, of course, like a scene or two later, we see Dean and Laura at the end of the day, and Dean's like, oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm taking this business trip to Mexico. You know, it's kind of a last minute thing.
And again, it's one of those things where it is plausible that he did kind of forget. And it's one of those things that, you know, like, yeah, it could have been a last minute trip to Mexico. But again, suspicions arise.
Yep.
So I think at this point, Laura talks to his dad and confirms, yeah, he is going to Mexico. And of course, he's like, I knew it. All right, we're going to Mexico. I got a guy. they can get us a hotel room.
And then we have like a cut. And they're in Mexico. They're driving around in Mexico in like a golf cart.
Yeah, I think like she leaves the kids with her mother.
Yeah, her mother.
Yeah, which they have a scene earlier about that, about like the relationship with her mother and her sister, and like how they see Felix. They kind of see him as they don't really talk to him that much. I guess it seems like the only person in the family that talks to Felix is Laura, because like they.
Laura is definitely the closest to him out of the family. You get the feeling that everybody else in the family is just kind of done with him.
Yeah, it seems like he's burned some bridges.
Yeah,
but anyway, so yeah, they go to Mexico. The next thing you know, we're in Mexico stalking Dean.
Yeah, and she's trying to figure out if there is something going on with Dean and Fiona.
Yeah, then we get this nice scene where Felix is singing to a lounge full of people. I got like a lot of Nick the Lounge Singer vibes, where he's singing Mexicali Rose to this room full of people I guess he just met, and they're all loving him and they're all like enamored with him as always. And it's just like,
yeah, I mean, it's a very Bill Murray kind of scene. You know, it's not quite him singing More Than This in Lost in Translation. Ooh. Which, oh, I love that scene so much,
dude. I just got into the Avalon album because of that.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I saw you post that on Facebook this week.
Yeah, guys, if you haven't listened to Roxy Music's Avalon, an album that came out in the 80s, I highly recommend you do. It's a great album.
It's great stuff, man. Yeah, Roxy Music, they did a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, it's like hella, it's like really mellow and like, I don't know, it really kind of fit the tone I was going for, like a very mellow, melancholy, kind of maybe like almost Sunday afternoonish type of album. But yeah.
Yeah.
Avalon, thumbs up.
All right. Thumbs up.
where the hell were we?
Felix kind of encourages Laura. He's like, okay, we're going to go like stake out Dean's hotel room. And they're kind of like creeping through the bushes and going up and finding it. And of course, Laura's phone goes off.
And
this happened earlier when they were tracking Dean in the car. Like, she gets a phone call from Dean, of course. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm just getting ready to go to bed. And then, of course, right that moment, a police siren goes by, just immediately revealing her lie.
Yep. It's like, oh, no, I'm by the open window. I'm sorry.
And then after she hangs up, Felix is like, oh, well, that was very good for your first time. Because he's, like, of course, very practiced at lying on phone calls.
Yeah. I mean, that whole thing, I mean, like, I think we touched on it earlier where, you know, even though Felix is this very lovable, you know, gregarious man who, you know, everybody is attracted to, like, he wasn't the best dad. And there is a scene where Rashida and Bill Murray, you know, Felix and Laura kind of talk about it, where he's like, yeah, she cheated on mom. And,
yeah,
you know, why'd you do that? And I think he kind of gives this honest answer where he's like, well, you know, when me and your mom met, she kind of looked at me with like I was the love of her life, but then you kids came along, and I love you kids. But then she looked at them like they were the love of my life, and I didn't.
All the love was going to you kids, and yeah, I needed that from somewhere else.
Right, and of course,
and it's a very honest answer, but at the same time, like Laura's like, well, how much is enough? What would be enough for you?
Yeah. I mean, he's not apologizing really for what he did or how he is or was, but he's giving a very honest answer.
He's kind of explaining it. And you see both of their points of view. It's really cool. It's a great scene.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate it. Cause like, yeah, sometimes the most honest answers are the ones where you're not the hero in them. Sometimes the most honest answer makes you look like a selfish dick. And
yeah.
You're still getting away from that.
And, you know, I mean, in this movie, everyone's a selfish dick to some degree, I think. Yeah. There's a lot of selfishness in this movie.
There are. But, you know, you can see, I mean, towards the end, you can see them trying to get a little better.
Yeah. So anyway, like I was saying, when they're outside Dean's hotel room and Felix is pointing in, he's like, oh, there's a woman in there. And you see a woman's figure silhouetted against the window. And, you know, of course you're thinking, oh, well, it's Fiona. They got a thing going on. And then right then, Rashida Jones's phone goes off. And who is it? It's her husband, Dean, who says, hey, surprise, I flew back from Mexico early. I'm going to be home in about a half hour.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
And she is literally hours away from home. And she has to say, like, oh, I'm not home. The kids are with my mom.
Yeah. And of course, I think also at that point, Fiona, who was in the home, mm-hmm. Hears the phone, goes out. It's like, hey, you, Dean's wife, right? Hey, Laura, right. How you been?
Yeah, she remembers her from the office party.
Right. And then, of course, we see that she's actually there with her girlfriend. And she says, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Dean went home early. He let me and my girlfriend have this little hacienda here.
Yeah, yeah. He let us have his suite. Wasn't that nice?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, did you come down to surprise Dean? And Rashida Jones is like, yes, I did, because that sounds better than the truth.
Very much so.
So, yeah. So Laura, as you might imagine, she's feeling like this big.
Oh, boy.
She's, she had her suspicions, and Felix was kind of stoking her suspicions all along. But Dean obviously is not having an affair with Fiona.
Right. It's been confirmed now.
Yeah.
So now at this point, Laura kind of leaves just totally embarrassed. I think at one point, Felix pokes his head in and it's like, oh, is this guy? I think. And then Fiona says, oh, is that guy your dad or something? And then he's mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, it is my dad. Hey. And I think at one point, another line that made me laugh was like when Fiona said, hey, why don't you guys, well, if you guys aren't doing anything, do you want to come in and have a drink? And I think Laura says, no, that's okay. But then Felix says, well, just one drink.
Yeah, yeah. And like, because Felix and Laura are hanging around together so much in this movie, Laura is mistaken for Felix's girlfriend, like, probably at least three times.
Yeah. It happens quite a bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's the kind of man who would be seen in the company of a much younger woman.
Right. I mean, that actually makes me think of something else, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
I mean, at this point, Laura goes back to their hotel room, packing up, saying, I'm getting out of here. Felix follows her. She's like totally embarrassed and upset. And as she's packing up and she's trying to get a flight out of Mexico, but I think there's like a storm coming, so there aren't any flights, so she can't leave just yet. So she's just really upset and frustrated, and she kind of unleashes on Felix, saying, like, I can't believe I let you put all these thoughts in my head, and like, I can't believe I followed you and all this stuff. And like, you know, you weren't the greatest father. You did all this shit to mom, and you're like, you know, you couldn't have been discreet about it. You're like, you were out in the open, you know, cheating on mom, just embarrassing her. Like, she kind of lets loose a lot of pent up anger she's had towards her.
Yeah. Family. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a whole lot of stuff. And we find out more about Felix. At one point he confides in Laura that the person that he was cheating with from his work, what was the character's name? Holly?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And he says, like, did you know that Holly just recently passed away? And he's like, she was only 50, and I never thought that I would outlive her. And it's obvious she was obviously like a very important person to Felix, and this obviously has screwed him up a bit.
But they also said like him and Holly didn't stay together that long.
No, but it was obviously like a significant relationship for him, or at the very least, like hearing about Holly's death really hit him hard. And you know, this is not somebody that Laura ever really knew. She's like, yeah, I never really got to know her.
Yeah, I didn't get to know your mistress, Dad. Sorry.
Yeah.
But
you get a little kind of peek into his inner life.
Yeah, it seems like he's a guy who just, I mean, he is who he is. He's comfortable with being who he is, and he doesn't really apologize for it. I mean, at the same time, he does care for all these women he's been with and embedded, and I guess
he's not really regretful. He's not apologetic, like you said, but I mean, there is, I don't know. It gave him pause, you know?
Absolutely.
And you understand him a bit better. You understand who he is.
Right.
So I guess then they had a falling out. I guess she had to wait till the next day to take a flight out. I think she ends up sleeping on the beach at some point. Then she goes, she takes a flight back to New York. She meets her kids and her mom there. And of course her husband's there. And of course he's like, what the fuck? Where were you? What the hell happened?
Yeah. Yeah. And they have to go outside to the street to talk out all their stuff because, you know, the mom's there and she's like putting the girls to bed. They don't want to get into a big raging fight right outside from their girls. And they talk it out.
Yeah. Which I understand. And like, so basically it's her sort of apologizing, saying about, you know, talking about her insecurities, about how like she's been in this writer's block. She hasn't been able to write, and that, you know, caused her to think all these things. And like she was afraid that, you know, he wasn't into her anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
he's very much like, what? No. I mean, I was just like working, and I'm really trying to get this startup off the ground, and I really need to be successful. And I'm sorry I haven't been around as much as I could have, but
yeah, it's just
been, you know, I'm doing this all for us.
Yeah, it's like him saying like, I want to be good enough for you and this kid. I want to give you everything you deserve. Like, it's basically like a lot of them unloading their insecurities and like what's really been kind of motivating them. It's a very good cathartic talk. And I kind of forgot that, like, oh, Marlon Wayans is a good actor. He's actually solid. Because like, I don't see him in too many things, really.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in anything like this before. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of straight acting from him. I mean, of course, I know him back going back to In Living Color, and he was on Happy Endings as well, wasn't he? Or was that Damon Wayans Jr.?
That's the other Wayans. There's always another Wayans.
There's so many Wayans, it's tough to keep track.
A lot of Wayans out there. But no, he was, I mean, I think, I remember years ago people noticing that he was actually a solid actor in, if you ever saw the movie Requiem for a Dream, that Aronofsky film, which is disturbing as hell. But like, he's really good in it. And I think at that point, people were like, oh, he's really solid. But like, I don't know, for some reason, he's never done more drama. I know for a while he was like connected to playing Richard Pryor in the Richard Pryor biopic, which I guess it still has yet to get off the ground. And like, people say they saw his reel for it. And people say like, no, he's really good as Richard Pryor. He's like got all the mannerisms down and whatever. But like, I guess that never happened. I don't know if it'll ever happen or will happen, but like, he's a solid actor. I just wish he'd do more like dramas and stuff, because he's got the chops.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, and it's not an easy role to play, because you have to kind of just play it right down the middle. Like, you can't be you can't be such the perfect husband that the audience goes like, oh, well, this is absurd. This is her imagination running away with her. But you also can't be like such a scumbag that you're like, well, obviously he's cheating. I mean, so he really has to play that ambiguity. He does a nice job of it. And the writing and the directing does a nice job of that as well.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the two of them have this great talk, and then they have kind of this new level of understanding. Cut to, we see Rashida Jones is sort of able to write again. And like you mentioned before, she's able to kind of come up with more stuff for her.
We see them out. She and Dean are out to dinner, having like a belated birthday celebration for her. And he's like, well, how did it go today? And she's like, oh, I was up to page 64 today. So she's like cracked her writer's block, and she's back at work. And you know, that's good to see.
Yeah. And we also see that Laura and Felix have kind of reconciled.
Yeah,
at one point she kind of leaves her apartment. I think they live in like Soho or Tribeca, and like, he's waiting outside in the car, you know, to say hey. And, you know, they have like a nice little tender moment where,
yeah. And he's like, hey, you know, I'm leaving on the QE2 in just a little bit. Do you want to come with? And she's like, well, thank you, but no, I can't. I have a family. I have work. I have a life.
Right. I believe he says, oh, you have your own adventure.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they kind of come to this understanding where they're like, he's my dad. I know he loves me. And I know he just kind of, this is just who he is. He just kind of goes off and has adventures and does, you know, does what he wants. Mm-hmm. And the world loves him. And, you know, I do love him. I have love for him.
Yeah. But he's, you know, she just, like it's like everybody in this movie, they just kind of decide to accept each other for who they are.
Yeah, that's a pretty,
and I like that.
I like that. Yeah. So at the very end, we see, like you said, the two of them having dinner in a restaurant. Dean gives Laura another gift for her birthday, and she opens it up. It's another Thermomix box, and he said, "Oh no, open it up!" And then she takes the tape off and looks in, and we see a smaller Cartier box in there.
Right.
And so,
right.
Yeah.
And she opens it up, and it's a new watch. And he says, "I'm sorry, it's late. I didn't realize how long it would take to get it engraved." So.
Right. And so, of course, you know, she's happy. She takes off the watch that her dad gave her, and she puts on this new watch.
Yeah.
And and that's pretty much the film. It's like, I like this film. It's like a nice, charming, sweet, short little film.
Yeah, it's very low key, but I really liked it. It doesn't get like outrageous or goofy, really. I mean, it's very credible, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely got like maybe early Woody Allen film kind of vibes from this. It's very New York. But yeah, it mostly just kind of plays on people, you know, the acting and the writing kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's no big like craziness that happens in it. It's very, like you said, like very low key. And I mean, the chemistry between Rashida Jones and Bill Murray really helped propel this film. That, and of course, just Bill Murray being Bill Murray.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's pretty great. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was looking up stuff online to talk about this film. And I think I saw somebody tweet it out, or I forget where I saw it, but they said, oh, well, like I think somebody mentioned or noticed that there was probably parallels between Laura and Felix and Rashida Jones and her actual dad, Quincy Jones. And I was like, I was like, oh, is Bill Murray just playing Quincy Jones throughout this whole film? Because there are, you can tell, like, I mean, both guys are like, you know, well-known men who know a lot of people and like make a lot of friends and are, you know, in high-end kind of high-profile positions, and they're both known Lotharios, known to love the ladies.
That didn't occur to me, but yeah, that's interesting. And you know, I mean, who knows, maybe I'm sure there was some of Sofia Coppola's life that went into this as well.
Yes, that's true. Like part of it was,
I mean, Francis Ford Coppola, also a pretty beloved guy. I have no idea about the state of his marriages or anything like that. As far as I know, he and Sophia's mother are still together, but.
Right. Yeah. Like part of me was thinking like, especially during those scenes where Laura was talking to Felix about, you know, his infidelities, like, oh, I wonder how much of that is kind of intertwined with how Quincy was with Rashida's mom. Like, I don't know exactly. I mean, I know Rashida. I mean, I don't know exactly how things ended with Quincy Jones and, you know, Peggy Lipton, Rashida's mom, who unfortunately like passed away, I believe like a week before
11 days before filming started.
Yipes.
I read.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I don't know how things ended between them, but like, it does make me
wonder. How long were they together? I don't even know.
That's a good question. I don't think they were together for too long. Let's look that up. Da, da, da,
da, da, da, da. Let me see if I can find it.
But yeah, like part of me does wonder how much did Rashida draw from her real life to play this character. I would suspect a good amount.
Yeah.
Married musician Quincy Jones in 1974. Separated in 86. Oh, separated in 86, divorced in 89. Oh, wow, they were together way longer than I thought.
Well, that's a good run.
So, yeah, I would say like 15 years? Wait, math.
Well, I'd start from the separation.
Okay, so then 12.
Because, you know, sometimes, you know, stuff goes on. You're separated and it takes a long time for the divorce to finalize. Particularly if you're rich, I'm sure.
All right, so they married in 74, separated in 86, so 12 years. It's a good chunk of time.
That's a good chunk of time. I mean, that's a decent chunk of anybody's life.
Absolutely. Yeah, so...
Did they have any kids besides Rashida Jones?
Yes, Rashida has a... I just saw it, a daughter. Rashida has a sister, Kidada.
Okay.
So yeah, KIDADA. So they had two kids.
All right. Okay.
Rashida and Kidada.
Okay.
But yeah, overall, I mean, thoughts on the film overall. What do you think?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was, like I said, it was a nice low key thing. I thought it was, I don't know if pleasant is the right word, because it's, you know, it's largely about a woman who suspects her husband is cheating on her. So I don't know if pleasant is the right word, but I enjoyed it. It's fun. Rashida Jones and Bill Murray have a really nice rapport together. You can believe that they're father and daughter.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, the fact that they've worked together before and they knew each other a bit, I think that really helps.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good film. Would you suggest somebody sign up for Apple TV to watch it?
I don't know. It's definitely worth seeing. And you can get like a free week of Apple TV. So yeah, by all means, check it out. I personally it doesn't look like to me that Apple TV has enough content overall to make it worth the while to like sign up for months and months and months.
Yeah. So sign up for the week, watch, On the Rocks, watch the Beastie Boys story, watch Ted Lasso. And then after that, you can just,
You know. They got Tom Hanks' last movie, Greyhound.
Oh, that's right.
I forgot about that. I'm hearing For All Mankind is supposed to be very good. That's like an alternate history thing where Russia reaches the moon first.
Interesting. All right.
And that Dickinson show with what's her face from the Pitch Perfect movies.
Oh, shit. I know you're talking about. Hold on.
Haley Steinfeld.
Oh, I wasn't even going to say that. I was going to say, like, the redhead.
No.
Okay, so it's not the redhead.
No.
Whose name is Anna Kendrick?
Is Anna Kendrick a redhead? I always consider her having brown hair.
It's reddish.
Okay.
Red-esque.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean... Guys, if you have Apple TV, watch On the Rocks. It's a neat little film. You definitely get like a good chunk of New York in there. Like New York is almost its own character in this film.
It's just so much fun to see like the real New York, and you could just see from the feel of it that it's the real New York. It's just so nice to not see generic movie city and they're playing it off like it's New York.
It's not Vancouver.
Exactly.
It's actually New York. So thumbs up all around for On the Rocks. So yeah, we really
dig it. Enjoyable. I mean, it's just nice seeing it's always nice seeing Bill Murray working. I always enjoy watching Rashida Jones. I've seen very few Sofia Coppola's films, but the ones I've seen I've really liked. I love Lost in Translation. That's such a great film.
That was a good one. I think that might be the only one I've seen as well.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see...
I know I saw, like, her first film, The Virgin Suicides, back in the day, and I remember I really didn't like it then. Maybe I should go back and revisit that. I don't know.
You know what? I take that back. I did see The Virgin Suicides back in the day, and I was like... I don't know. I thought it was a little... kind of disturbed me about with all the suicide, all the suicides,
all the suicides, all the virginity.
Yeah, I was like, oh,
the virginity and the suicides going together. It's
I know it's one of those things where it says virgin suicides in the title, so I should expect suicide.
They did not lie.
Yeah, not lie. Like I don't know why I was like upset. It's like, oh, there's actual suicides in this.
Yikes. There's actual virgins committing suicide.
Whoa! This title was misleading.
Yeah.
What else? Marie Antoinette, I haven't seen.
Never saw that.
The Bling Ring.
I don't think I'd even heard of that.
That's the one with Emma Watson from Harry Potter.
Okay, yeah.
The Beguiled.
I've seen A Very Merry Christmas because she directed that as well.
The Beguiled, I have not seen.
Nope.
And Ordinary Rocks, I saw. There you go.
Yeah.
And a film called Somewhere, which I have not seen. Wow. All right. Because I got some work cut out for me.
We got a few Sofia Coppola movies to watch, I guess.
Indeed, Sofia Coppola. Let's do it up. Okay, all right. So, that's our episode, guys. You know, On the Rocks. thumbs up.
That's it. All yep. Right.
So should we talk about what we're going to talk about next week, for chance?
Sure. We could talk about what we're going to do the next couple weeks, I think.
Yeah, let's do it. Yay.
Okay. So, I mean, do you want to do it, Darren?
You know what? I will do it.
Yeah, you go ahead.
So, as most people know, next week is my birthday week, of course, as is observed throughout the country.
Yes. National holiday.
National holiday, of course. Everybody had the day off of work. You know, I proclaimed it. And so we're going to do one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite, I would say this is one of my favorite comedies of all time, I would say.
Wow.
Definitely of the 80s, probably of all time. And it's also a film that stars one of my favorite SNL cast members of all time, one of my favorite comedians of all time. I know this movie backwards and forward. I can quote it like right off the back of my hand. Takes place in my hometown of Queens, New York. Ladies and gentlemen, we are doing the original 1988 film, Coming to America.
Woo!
Hot diggity damn.
And this is very topical because the sequel, Coming to America, the sequel to Coming to America, Coming to America, it just dropped this last week. So we're going to watch the original from 1988, and then we're going to watch the sequel that has been done 30 years later.
Yeah, so we're going to contrast and compare which one's better, which one's worse. Did the sequel need to be made at all?
Yeah.
So I'm super pumped for this because, like I said before, I love Coming to America, the 88 original. It's near and dear to my heart. I still kind of quote it to this day. Like, it's got a lot of good stuff in it. I've seen it multiple times. I'm going to try to not be like crazy fanboy obnoxious about the film. Like, you know, I'm going to try to pull away from being all MacGruber about it, but like, I can see myself getting to MacGruber levels over.
Yeah. Film. Yeah. I can see that too. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I mean, I saw it back in the day, of course. But I couldn't tell you the last time I watched this movie all the way through.
Dude,
it's one of those movies you see bits and pieces of on TV, and usually if you come across it flipping channels, you're going to stick with it till the end.
Yeah,
but been a long time since I watched it from beginning to end, so I'm looking forward to revisiting it.
Yeah, I mean, I think last time I saw it was probably maybe a couple months ago, and it still holds up. It's a work of art, this film. And as far as the sequel, Coming to America. I gotta be honest, I was a little iffy on it because I love the original so much. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, do we need a sequel? Is this just a cash grab? Because like, it seems like the original Coming to America is kind of in the public zeitgeist recently. Like it's kind of trending a lot more on Twitter and Instagram. It's kind of had this like sort of buzz through the internet where people are like remembering how good it was, and it's kind of being used in memes more and more. So, like, part of me thinks, well, did they only make the sequel because the original is, like, kind of, like, now buzzworthy and trending online? Like, are they just trying to capitalize off of that and make this movie and make some money? So, like, is it a thing where they put more time into getting all the original stars in it and just kind of, you know, putting all these nostalgic moments than they did actually putting together a solid script? And then I saw the trailers for it, and the trailers didn't wow me really. I was a little underwhelmed by it, but I haven't seen the movie yet, so maybe all the good stuff's in the movie and it wasn't in the trailer. So I'm going in cautiously optimistic about Coming to America.
This is very confusing in an audio medium where we got the original Coming to America and then the sequel Coming to America.
Coming to America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two Coming to America.
Too fast to America.
We need to figure out some sort of code or something. But yeah, that'll be interesting. So we're going to do back-to-back Eddie Murphy movies.
Can you handle it, America?
I don't think you can. I don't think you're ready.
I don't think you're ready for this.
You are
jelly.
Not ready for all the soul glow that we're going to drop on you.
Oh, just drip it all down in your eyes. Feeling oh so silky smooth.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the first one is aged, because and it'll be interesting to see how reminiscent the sequel is of the original. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fantastic. I am pumped. I am stoked. I am gassed. I am all these things.
Okay, so that's going to be next week. Do we have anything else to cover? Do we have any new reviews or any cool tweets that we got this week?
No and no.
All right. Okay.
No one loves us.
I'm sure people were busy.
Yeah, because, you know, people are out and about. You know, it's not like there's a pandemic or anything keeping people at home.
They got stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you can follow me at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on the Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and then the word comic. And you can also follow the show page on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. And yeah, please tweet at us. You know, suggest some movies for us because the summer hiatus is going to be here before we know it. And we're going to need content for those long 3 months when the show's off the air.
Indeed. We actually did get some suggestions for films. Like, I think somebody suggested the film, I think Mr. Franklin, the one that Noelle Wells starred in and directed.
And oh, yes. Okay. I remember that being suggested.
And there was another one that I can't seem to find right now. But yeah. But guys, keep those suggestions coming in. We write them all down on in our little journal. And like they all go into the vault. And
Our journal.
And yeah, all suggestions are welcome.
Yes. Not all suggestions are taken, but all suggestions are welcome.
Yes. If it's a movie that both of us are like, no, this looks like garbage, we probably won't do it.
Yes, I'm thinking of one movie in particular. Ooh. Where we both were like, yeah, that doesn't look like something we would enjoy.
P.U.
Yeah. And we will not say what it is, but it's a movie with an SNL alum or two in it.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, I just got it. I just got the one you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, you know the one.
Yeah,
I texted you about it. I was like, yeah, I don't think I want to see this, Darren.
Yeah.
I don't think I would like it.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So.
So, yeah.
But so we will see you next week with the original Coming to America. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.